Good luck is using the law of cause and effect wisely. Good luck is using the law of cause and effect wisely. One of our students wrote in, and I think, one of our students wrote in, he is in prison. And he was saying that his luck ran out on him, and that he needs some good luck, and that I should treat for him for good luck. And I will be doing that with this, you know. But good luck is using the law of cause and effects wisely. People think that it's chance, that something outside of them helps them or fulfills them or gives them their needs, but it's silly. It's only something inside of us. When you consider how a person walking down the street with a smile on their face attracts smiles from everybody. A person walking down the street with a frown on their face, nobody wants anything to do with them. They back away from them. They just, turn their head away from them. They don't even look at them. This is why, in so many times, a woman or a man walking down the street and they're being robbed. Someone is taking their purse or their wallet or something, and other people see it. They turn their head and walk the other way. They don't want any part of it. They think that that is the way to ignore it. And of course, that is one way. However, if they would just speak their word and say, I surround you with my pure white light of love, all is in divine order, poof, the thing would be over. The thing would be over. If these people on the airplane, September 11th, had just said, all is in divine order, all is in divine order. I am not touched by this. I'm not scared by this. I don't like it, but I speak my word. All is in divine order. All is in divine order with all of my enthusiasm, all of my joy. I do not have to say it out loud. I can just say it in my heart. Boom. There'd be a turnaround. The guys would lose their interest. They would lose their confidence, the terrorists. They'd lose their ability to terrorize. When you're a big bully and I'm a little boy, and you come along and you try to hurt me, and I say, Daddy, and Daddy walks out, and Daddy is bigger than you are, and he looks down at you, what is it, son? He's trying to hurt me. What was your problem? Oh, I wanted to give him something. Complete changer. Just the big bully ceases to be the big bully because a bigger force comes along and brings about a whole new picture. And this is what we could do. We could do this any area of our life. Just bring that bigger power, not an outside power. We don't need Daddy to come along and do it. We just have our own inner. So now, have you met Snuggles yet? Snuggles is a little tiny dog, a Maltese Terrier. He's about 18 inches long, and he's about 6.5 to 7 inches high. And he goes up to our big dogs, and he says to our big dogs, I'm playing with you, and you're playing with me. And if you don't like it, I'm going to nip your legs. I'm going to nip your muscles and your legs. You're playing with him. And so next thing you know, they're playing with him. I mean, he, with his little 10-week-old, 10-week-old age, he's running the roost. Here we go. Love, who is 2 years old at least, and then we have Button, who is 5 years old or better, and my goodness, they just bend over backwards for that little kid and let him run the roost. And he says, now let's go run, let's go play. And he gets them so excited they forget that he's just a little guy leading the roost. It's just like Ellen's grandson. His name is Marcello. And he is not a big man, but he's a very powerful young man. And he's, 16? And wherever he goes, the kids follow him. And he shows them how to play soccer. He shows them how to play, what do you do with this hockey, with a puck and so on, on the grass. He shows them how to run. He shows them how to shoot baskets. He shows them how to do rollerblading. He shows them how to do snow skiing and stuff like that. He's good. And he's very good. And they respect him because he is good. but he also has that sensitive, caring nature about him, which lets him show somebody else how to do it and doesn't make them feel stupid in the learning process. And that's really an art. But that's what Marcello can do, and that's what Snuggles does. He doesn't act superior to these dogs. He says, look, we're playing. That's what I'm here for. You may think I'm small for my age, and I'm actually big for my age, but I'm doing just fine. And I think this is what we do when we put the law of cause and effect in motion. We have that self-confidence, that power within us, that courage within us to do anything, to speak anywhere, to do anything, to accomplish anything. Now, what kind of luck do you want in your life? Do you want luck that sometimes works and sometimes doesn't? You have all lived long enough. I know you're all at least 25. You all have lived long enough that you have prayed and it didn't work. You have said, oh God, help me. Oh God, whatever I must do to make me feel better, help me. Oh God, show me the way. Guide me, direct me. Oh God, if I could only be a millionaire by the time I'm 25, I'd be just satisfied with everything in life. Of course, that's a joke today. A millionaire at 25 today is like a thousandaire, 100,000-aire a short time ago. But you prayed, and it didn't work. You said, oh God, help me. Oh God, help me. And what were you doing? You were just making luck. You were just hoping that things would work out. You were just wishing that things would work out. You didn't believe that you could do it, but you believe that the big man in the sky could do it. And as long as you believe the big man in the sky could do it, you're not going to get it. You're not going to get it. No, you could get it when you say, I believe, I believe, I believe, I believe, I believe. But you're not really believing in the big man in the sky anymore. You're believing in the big man in you, the divine in you, the purity in you, the goodness in you. Miracle on 35th Street, or what, 34th Street, the little girl, when she realized she was getting close to this house, and she was saying, I believe, I believe, I believe, she wanted this house that Santa Claus would have told her could be hers if she wanted it. And there it was. Now, for you and for me, it doesn't make any difference that her mother and her friend were not married, and that they were thinking of getting married, but not too strongly. And they were thinking they'd have to get a house, but not too strongly. And then all of a sudden, here's this house, here's this little girl who says, this is my house, and they look at it, and a smile of parenthood in their hearts, and they say, well, we'll buy it for her, you know. And of course, they got married and lived happily ever after. But she believed in herself. She believed in her own inner consciousness. She believed in the divine. She believed in the law of cause and effect. She didn't know how to say law of cause and effect because no one had used that term with her. But, well, maybe her mother had. But she spoke her word and received her gift. Now, where are you? Are you speaking your word and getting your gift? Or are you praying and desiring things and not having them happen? If you are, if your prayers are not answered, then it's not that you prayed amiss. You might have prayed to the wrong thing, object, person, being, whatever, but you didn't pray amiss. You just did not pray to the right awareness, and that awareness is the law of cause and effect. Now, how do you put the law of cause and effect in motion to have a nice relationship? How do you put the law of cause and effect into motion to have a nice home? How do you put the law of cause and effect into motion when you had two miscarriages and you'd like to have the baby come, you know? You just put the law in motion. Anybody who has ever had difficulty with pregnancies, they say, oh, I always have difficulty with pregnancies. Oh, every pregnancy I have is difficult. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. And, of course, it continues to be so. But the minute the doctor says to him, this is going to be an easy pregnancy. You're going to have two children, and they're going to be fantastic. They are already. They're super. Well, you expect it. And then what happens? They're wonderful. It's super. It's glorious. You have put the law of cause and effect in motion. Luck had nothing to do with it. And you're the winner. Believe it or not. It works. I love you. I aim high. I get what I want from life. It works. I aim high. I get what I want from life. It works. We do. We get what we want from life. We get whatever we ask of life. And if we ask for nothing, we get nothing. If we feel sorry for ourselves and we feel that we're not getting our share of life, we don't get our share of life. Not because it's not there. Because the minute we feel sorry for ourselves, we close our eyes to the very fact that it's there. And of course, people who are thinking high are like the saint. 13-year-old kid here. And he says, after seeing our 36-foot bounder motorhome, that's a lovely motorhome. I'm going to get one like that for my mom, only bigger. In Europe, to get a bigger motorhome would be quite an experience. But not for him. He doesn't stop and think that there's not a market for big motorhomes over there, and there won't be very many of them, if there's any over there. He just thinks, I want to get a big one. Get a big one for mom, and what the heck. Now, here in the United States, many times we go to Europe and we drive a car around Europe and then we just ship it home. $500 it used to be to send the car on the boat and send it home. Perhaps it's more now. But so here he comes over and finds himself the motorhome he likes, and then he just puts it on the boat and sends it over. And then he flies over there, and when it arrives, he goes down to the dock and picks it up. Drives it home, you know. Why not? It's just part of the cost. And he doesn't have to say, they don't sell them over here, they don't do this, it's not there, they won't have a warranty pack over here, they won't have a service area. What's there to service? What's there to service on a big motorhome that isn't exactly the same as on a smaller motorhome? A small motorhome, you have the toilets, you have the sewer system, you have the electrical system. On the small motorhome, you have the power units, you have the generator, you have all of the things you'd have on the big one. But you see, aim high. Aim high. Whatever it is that turns you on. Now, he said the word big and bigger merely because he felt that what we had was great, but he wanted to even be greater. He wanted to have not only the best, but the super best. And that's good. And they exist. They exist. We have a 36-footer, there's 40-footers, and there's 45-footers, and there's 50-footers. Ha-ha. Can you imagine touring down the road with a 50-footer? And you got to remember, you know, when you turn corners, and you got to remember all these little goodies. But, hey, that's just part of having a motorhome. We have to remember turning corners, too. It's so easy to, you know, run onto the curb because you don't realize that your rear end has to go far enough out in the street to get around the corner. But aim high. Think big. Why limit yourself? I get what I want from life, and it works. We bought the motorhome, and we looked at it in the lot, and I drove it first. And then I said, okay, Ellen, now it's your turn. And we were in the parking lot. She got behind the seat, adjusted everything, and started up and just cruised out of there just like she'd been doing it all of her life. And the salesman said, my gosh, you've been doing this all your life? She said, yes. You know? And, I mean, you know, why not give them confidence? And then she followed it up by doing it very nicely. She drove very properly and very smartly. Not fast, not slow, just with confidence. And, you see, if we do all things in life like that, you get what you want from life. You just take it easy. Now, Rosalie really should not have driven a car because she was scatterbrained. She had not learned to be one-pointed. But the car driving would help her to be one-pointed a little bit. And her husband didn't want to train her to be one-pointed. He liked her just the way she was, dependent on him. And so all of her life, she never bothered to learn. So she comes here, and we put her in the golf cart, and she does a fairly good job, right off the bat. She didn't do everything perfect, but who does everything perfect on the first time they start with something? And we'll move her into the tractor. Not a lot, but just let her say, like Garrett said, I drove the tractor. I think he went maybe 20 feet, you know. Mm-hmm. But I drove the tractor, which is something you go home and has a picture of them, you know. Wow, you know, wow, Garrett, you're fantastic, you know, you're great. Or, yeah, yeah, Garrett, you're one of us, you know, Swiss farmers driving tractors and stuff like that. But this is all part of life. It's all part of life. You aim high. And you figure out for yourself, you get what you want out of life. But you get what you want out of life only when you're not afraid to enter in. Because now, when Anita brought the horse over and everybody fell off the horse, you thought to yourself, Anita would give up and she'd say, what a bunch of clowns, you know. But no, if the horse was willing to stick with it, Anita was willing to stick with it. And the horse kept its legs wide apart while everybody crawled in and out from underneath the horse. And the horse probably thought to himself, this is really a circus. Yeah, this is really a circus. But he says, I like circuses. He says, I get attention that way. He says, otherwise I'm just standing in my corral there, just eating my oats and just relaxing. But it's much more fun to be out and looking around the world, especially over at that nice place, you know. They have concrete to stand on. You know, that's something nice. Not all the time, but just once in a while. Yeah, step my feet on the concrete and get stuff out of my shoes that Anita doesn't brush off my feet after she takes me for a walk, you know. Because Anita, you know what she should do? You know what she should do? She should give the horse a manicure after each walk, right? Yeah, and she should brush him down after each walk. But the boys say, we'll do that. So don't bother, don't bother. But she should do that. You know why?
Okay. Why? Caring.
Yeah, that's a logical thing, but why?
Love.
The horse would know she loves him.
Love
the horse would know that she loves her. It's a mirror. So the horse would know that she loves. Whoever cares for someone, they know you love them. If you take a cat and you bother to go through their toes and go through their nose and go through their ears and make sure everything is clean and nice, you know. They know that you meant that with love, because it's a pain in the neck bothering to do stuff like that. And I do that with Button and Love. And Love puts up with it just so long, you know. Mm-hmm. But he knows that it's for his good. He knows that I care. And then as soon as I'm done, he doesn't walk away. He just stands there right in my way while I'm trying to put the tools away. And he just is so happy. And Button is the same way. I take Button and I give him a rub down, you know, and I love you, and give him nose to nose, you know. And he says, it's nice. And I say, okay. So then I'll try to walk away, he stands right in front of me. they love it. But when you aim high, you aim at just doing everything right. Whatever the little chore is or whatever the big chore is, do everything right. Then you get what you want out of life. But it's only because you apply the principle of pure love. And with pure love, everything does work. Yeah. What did the saint say to us when we said, don't forget your knapsack? He said, you know, I think I left the other knapsack in Legoland. And of course, he's probably right. Because he had a tendency to be a little careless where he puts things. And he puts his glasses on the table here. And he puts his sack over there, and he puts a toothbrush in the bathroom, and he puts, you know, instead of having everything organized, and especially in the last minute, you know, you don't leave things here and there because, you know, then when you get on the plane, you say, whoops, wait, I gotta go back. Little late, son, little late. But aim high. When you aim high with order. Now, what's the blessing that Ellen sent the saint home with?
Keep his room clean.
You sent the saint home with the idea that he was an orderly young man, and he put things in their proper place, and he kept his room in order, and he would be very happy. And he was shaking his head like this and saying, yes, I'm doing it. So his side-to-side motion was saying no, and his words were saying yes. I'm sure that he's training himself. And he said he washed the windows for his mother. Now, and then today he confesses that he washed the window in his room, which is better than none. But nonetheless, I'm sure his mother appreciates not having him wash the windows, because she is running a professional operation there with people coming in who expect the place to look nice, you know. So these are very interesting things. How can you aim high? By finding your dream and following it. Finding your love and following it. Determining what your values are. And then apply it, and you'll see it works. But it can't work unless you have a dream. So have a dream and aim high. You get what you want from life. It works. I love you. 10 minutes and 36 seconds.
You think he could want to buy a horse?
Meeting interesting people depends on who I am. Meeting interesting people depends on who I am. If I am an interesting person, I will meet interesting people. If I am an uninteresting person, interesting people can be all around me and I won't even know it. I won't even realize that they're there and they're fascinating. How many times have you gone into a store and you smiled at the clerk and you said something to the clerk like, "My, your hair is so shiny and so glorious. You know, what do you use? It's just marvelous. Is that your natural hair? You know, you don't even have to put anything on it, that it looks so glorious." And it must be a true compliment. It must be something that is valid, not just for conversation's sake. And you'll be surprised. The clerk will probably turn to you and say, "Well, I used to have trouble with my hair. And then I was talking to a Mexican friend of mine, and they were telling me how they use aloe vera, the natural plant aloe vera, in their hair. And their hair is always so luxuriant, always so non-frizzy, you know, just so perfect. And so I started using aloe vera, the natural plant, in my as a rinse of my hair. And my hair has just become more full body and luxuriant and beautiful. It's really quite lovely. I was amazed how well it worked, and I just thoroughly enjoy it. I suggested it to my whole family, but none of them had taken the hint. They just let my hair be the most beautiful hair in the family." But you know, it's like that a lot of times. The clerk says, a lot of people, they would like to have good looking hair. They'd like to have a beautiful complexion. They'd like to have many other things, but they don't do what it takes to get it. "True, it's all thought," she says, "but helping it along with something as beautiful as aloe vera and something that's so simple and it works for everybody, it's amazing more people don't do it." And I told her, "Well, people are like that. People are like that, but you aren't. You are not an ordinary person. You are an exceptional person. You are a person with this radiant, glorious hair, and I'm sure that wherever you go, everyone recognizes it immediately." "Oh, yes, that's true." "Well, now, do you do that to please yourself or to please others?" Of course, that's sort of a question with an answer within it already, but she said, "Oh, if I didn't like myself, I wouldn't go to all the bother of doing this. But I like my hair when it's so beautiful because I like it. I comb it, I stroke it. I sit there and I just put my hand on my hair and I feel how glorious it feels, and it's just for me alone. If anybody else wants to look at it and see, I went so through that trying to get other people to be interested in it too, but they weren't, and so I let it go. It doesn't bother me. I love it the way it is." And then, as I walked down the street, I came to the drugstore. And in the drugstore, I had to pick up some pharmacy items. And so, as I was standing at the pharmacy counter, the girl was saying that she would like to have more dependents so she could have more tax write-off, you know. She just has 2 children. She wishes she had a few more. And I said, "Well, you can adopt me." And she looked up at me and saw my gray hair and my beautiful being, and she says, as much as I'd like that, I don't think they'd let me get away with it. I said, but, you know, if you adopted me, then you could bring home your various things and to me, and then I wouldn't have to go out and buy them. Wouldn't that be nice? She said, yes, that would be very nice. She says, oh, by the way, I've been working on some very interesting things here. We've been doing a research on all the HMOs. I said, you have? I said, well, I'm very interested in the HMOs. Which ones are the better ones, the health insurance companies, you know, that serve you with the health insurance and so forth? And I said, which ones do you find the best? And so she rattled off a number of them. And then I said, I know you're not supposed to give these out. And she didn't say anything. She just said, well, these are my favorites, because these are the ones we deal with, and we find that the people who have these companies are the happiest, because the companies pay for everything and do everything without question. They just do it all properly. The doctor says it's so. And they're very content with that. And the other ones, like the one you're using, the doctors are always complaining about it, and the druggists are always complaining about it, because they don't always pay for things as they should. But, she said, this is where I stand. And then the other pharmacist, who was the doctor, he came to the window and he said, but now, that's right, but I still think the one she said first is the best one, because that really is tops, and it's tops in my book. And anybody who deals with them is going to be very happy. And so, I hadn't even realized that had been in my consciousness. The HMOs had been something that I'd been thinking about and wondering, you know, what I should do, because it's part of my Medi-Cal and Medicare services that are available from the state and from the nation, you know, through Social Security and things like that. Just, you know, it's available. And so it's very interesting. The people you meet depend upon what thoughts are going through your head. And here I was thinking about these various things, and then as these thoughts were going through my head, the people just popped right up, right out of nowhere, to be part of it. And it's just charming. And another illustration of this is when Ellen went to the doctor's office. She went in there to have some blood test or something, and so she went in early. And she was there about 20 minutes before the office opened, because she wanted to be first in line. Well, there were about 100 people ahead of her. And so she was first in line after 100 people. And so they all sat in this big room waiting for the show to begin. And as they were waiting, they were talking with each other in a very friendly way, you know. And how are you today? What's going on with you? And Ellen, next thing you know, is discussing philosophy with them, offering them suggestions about positive thinking and positive living and positive action. And just as Ellen was about to break into song and share with them, I like me, she was called into the doctor's office. So they'll never know what other blessings Ellen could have given them. One of the ladies said to Ellen, perhaps you should go last, because, you know, you're so charming and you stimulate a lot of good conversation here. But Ellen did go early in the game, and it was wonderful. But you see, meeting interesting people depends on who I am. There are interesting people around us everywhere, all the time, doing all sorts of wonderful things, and we just don't have our eyes open to them. Ellen happens to think that beautiful girls are a lovely thing to look at. And so she walked into the Dixieline hardware store in El Cajon, and as she walked in the door, these blazing beauties were standing there, you know, just enough to knock your socks off. And Ellen walked in, and she finished picking up a few items for John. And when she was done, she came to the counter, and here these girls are just waiting. What can I do for you? Did you find everything you wanted? And is everything okay? And just really totally harmonious, which is exactly what Ellen created. Now, these are things that we can all create. We can all create our life to be filled with wonderful people who are just like we are, just as thrilling, just as exciting, just as enjoyable as we are. But if we have a bad hair day, if we have a bad day where things aren't going right, you watch. Keep track of it. The people you meet are going to be bad hair day people. there are going to be people who are not very kind, not very sensitive, not very caring, because you're not. You had a hang-up. You hurt yourself by thinking bad thoughts about yourself. And lo and behold, you have bad activities in your world. Meeting interesting people depends on who I am. Stop and think. Who are you? Are you a beautiful, worthwhile, desirable, sensitive, intelligent, caring person? If you are, that's the kind of people you're going to meet. And if you're not, then that's the kind of people you're going to meet. Whoever you are is the kind of people you're going to meet. What are you ready for? That's up to you. Can you make your choice now?
Yep.
What is your choice? You're looking for the problem or the solution? If you're looking for the solution, people will surround you with solutions. If you're looking for the problem, people will constantly tell you what their problems are. So let's all dwell on the solution and enjoy it with all of our heart. Meeting interesting people depends on who I am. How true. I love you. When I value my work, I am tireless. When I value my work, I am tireless. When I value my work, I'm tireless. You know, when we work at whatever things we work at, and we truly enjoy doing the job, there's nothing to it. The work just flies by. When we feel that our work is not appreciated, which of course is a silly thing to do because we should appreciate it, when we feel that our work is not beneficial to anybody, which we should always feel it's beneficial because we've done it, you know, and when we feel that our work is menial, that anyone could do it, which is a silly thing to do because we're doing it. And if we're doing it, it's noble work. Anything we do is wonderful work. So when I value my work, I am tireless. No. People who put in a good day's work and like what they're doing, they come home ready to work in the yard, ready to go to the movies, to go dancing. Oh my goodness, isn't it something when you're a young person, newlywed, so forth, and you want to go out dancing in the evening? There's nothing to it. You don't think a thing about it. Now, you go out dancing before you get married because you're looking for someone to marry or to have a relationship with or something. And so you go out to these dances and you just have a ball, and you're so eager to see who's all there and what's all going on that you're just having a ball. And your day's work has only invigorated you for this because you liked what you did during the day. You liked whatever activity you were in. And so when you went to your evening work, which was having fun and being yourself and seeing the town and cruising up and down Main Street looking for some beautiful girl there that might be interested in riding in your car, and most of them stick up their nose at you because they already have boyfriends, but you can always tell the ones that don't, they're the ones that don't have a steady boyfriend, or they were always interested in you but never had the courage to do anything about it. So when you have fun doing your work, whatever it is, when you value your work, when you think that your work is worthwhile, then it's fun. Now, I talked to you about dusting. And dusting is considered a very menial work, to take a dust cloth and wipe it over the furniture and over the windowsills and so forth. It's a very menial work because it's something that has to be done day after day after day. If you ever stop, don't do it for one day, it seems to leave a cloud there, a babuda all over the place. And you really should dust up that babuda, because Sai Baba, he's smart, he sells it. He sells it in little tubes. Just think, if you go through your whole house, pick up all the babuda from you and your family. This is the lope babuda, or the or the dainty babuda, or the germini babuda, the Pukrit Babuda, or the Enz Babuda, or the Barley Babuda. Now, the Barley Babuda, of course, would have a great sale, wouldn't it?
It rings.
It rings, yeah, it has certain snap to it.
The BB.
They beat him. Big Barley Babuda, BBB. The Barley Babuda. And you don't even be an EB. The N's Babuda. Mm. And Ellen be a PB. Pukrit Babuda. As an Ingeborg. And Ellen, she'd be a. I don't know how many names you're going to carry there. The
Jeremy Wilms. JB.
Huh? JB. JB. Yeah, yeah. And you'd be a DB. The Dainty Babuda. Well, that's interesting. People could look at that from many different points of view. The gentle Babuda, it's a sensitive Babuda, it's a charismatic Babuda, it's a dainty Babuda.
I'm the joyous Babuda.
Oh, you're the JB, huh? Joyous Babuda. And Anitam, there's not much you can do with an LB. If an LP, it'd be long playing record, but
love
LB.
Babuda. Love.
Love Babuda? Ooh.
I'm the ecstatic Babuda.
Ecstasy
Babuda.
What interesting thing. See, when you're having fun, you're very creative. You're thinking of all sorts of great ideas. When you value your work, then life just takes on a totally different picture. Now, what are some of the ways that we could value our work? What are some of the ways that we could put meaning into whatever work we do? Well, Ingeborg works in the mail department. If it's mail that comes to us, which is our total communication program, Ingeborg's in charge of it. She's in charge of what comes in, what goes out. She knows it, and she knows it's done right. She makes sure the amount of postage on each thing is correct so that we don't send out more than necessary. She makes sure that everyone gets their mail who is here, and everyone who's there gets their mail. She's just, that we're Correspondence College. That's what it's all about. We're soon going to kick her out, though. We're going to be a internet college, and everything's going to be on the internet. And then she's going to have to be in charge of the internet, and whoever is sending in anything, she's going to have to channel it to the various divisions where it goes, like the operator on a telephone, and make sure that it goes, but it also has with it all of the software that's necessary to operate it. So if she's sending things to the proctor, she's got to make sure all the stuff goes with it for the student, so that the proctor knows the student's code and can just press the button and bring up their files and all the details and enter in the amount of money that they send in on their credit card. And you know, because that's going to be a big business. That's going to be $1,000 from each person every day. Wow, you know, no time at all. We'd have more money. We know what to do with. But it's fun. Now, if Ingeborg should ever feel that her work was unimportant, what would happen to her work? As the keystone of the whole operation here, of everything that comes in and goes out, she would completely destroy the organization, because she would think that her job, which was the keystone job, was not important. Now, if the proctor ever thought that her work was not important, tedious as it may be at times, because you have to read the book before you read the lesson that they send in. You have to read the chapter before you read their essay. And how many of you read the chapter before you read the essay for each lesson? Very interesting. You see, if you don't do that, you're not one with the student. You're not on their level of consciousness of what they are thinking about at the time they're writing their essay. They're writing their essay at on lesson 7 in book 1. In the Art and Science of Wholeness, and you are already through with all the books, and you're off into the higher echelon of metaphysics, and then you expect them to be there, and they haven't even finished the first book. They're moving along gently, and you have to move with them. But the trouble is, you have a tendency to look at them and say, well, they're just where I am, and they're not. So to be a proper proctor takes dedication of self beyond imagination. because it's so easy to feel, oh, I've been there, done that, I know that, I know exactly what that lesson calls for, I know exactly what that review calls for, and so we don't. I check it over myself. If I ever do any proctoring, I read the lesson first and then go on. Because I've written dozens of books and other things, and I could easily think that they're in my level of thinking wherever I am, and they're coming up to it. Or they may be further ahead than I am in 100 other areas, but in this particular area, that's why they're taking the course. So, if we don't value our work becomes a bore, and we become a bore, and the student becomes bored and quits. We wonder why the students quit, because the proctors are not enthusiastic about the work that they're doing. Now, I'm not saying our proctors are not enthusiastic, because our students don't quit happily. Some of them just are long in sending in their lessons. But let's always make our work to be exciting and wonderful, realizing that we are the keystone for these people's life. As they do their lesson, they change their whole attitude about themselves, about their world, about everything that they're in. If we value our work, everything that our work touches will become greater and greater and more wonderful. And it's a joyous thing. And so it is. I have my square buttons in different places. Yeah. Everybody used to want to be a proctor. I want to proctor lessons. I want to proctor. I'll do this lesson first. Well, I thought so. I'll do this. And then I go in 10 minutes later and they're proctoring a lesson.
I've done the course. Did you read the lesson first? No? Okay, stop proctoring. You have no right to proctor a lesson if you have not just read the chapter in which they're writing about. Bad enough you don't read the whole book, you know, to prepare to proctor, but at least read the lesson that they're writing about, you know. That's tough. Now,
actually a blessing.
I'm sorry?
It's actually a blessing to read the lesson.
Oh, what a blessing. Yeah, you're getting the benefit of what everybody has. Okay, you may have noticed that I have big, happy faces on each one of these people here.
Yep.
Just to remind you. Now, I would like each one of you to fill this out and to say what you like about Anita, Ellen, Herb, Ingeborg, John, Sybil. I put all of us there because I thought that we should all be represented. Now, I suppose you'd like to get up and get pencils for everybody with pens.
I got two.
I have a pencil.
Thank you.
Nice shot.
Because you're going to keep the second one and fill it in later. Mm-hmm. At your leisure, and perhaps you'll come to different conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't have to put your name in the paper.
Yeah.
Your writing will be evident enough.
Mm-hmm. George,
oh, I'm out of
time.
Huh?
Please, I'm out
of time.
That can help. I gave one to help. I just give each one from their desk. And they
pencil,
help.
Pencil?
You said
pens. Pen, pencil, whatever.
Oh.
Leave it.
From
your desk. Sylvia, mm-hmm. If you have lived the many thousands of years I have lived, you've lived millions and years. But you've lived the many thousands. You remember how. Go down and shovel some coal in the furnace. You know, and sharpen a pencil. Pens were fountain pens. They didn't even have ballpoint pens. I was a kid. It's hard to imagine that, isn't it?
Yeah. And you ask about yourself?
Sure.
Of course. What I like about it.